Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our intention for this to be a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review of the themes of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they are founded upon so that they may prove to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm always so excited and looking forward to fun conversations with you and our guest. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews and roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in a field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. Our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change success.
In this episode, we will discuss leadership, myths, behaviors, and practice with Dr. Gary A. DePaul. Dr. DePaul is a speaker, author, researcher, and leadership futurist. He's also the host of Unlabeled Leadership Podcast. The Unlabeled Leadership Podcast helps you develop your leadership capabilities to achieve the results you want, in which Dr. DePaul and guests share personal stories about the small acts you can use to lead effectively. These acts can profoundly influence the performance of your peers, teams, organization, and even yourself. When we strengthen our leadership, work becomes more satisfying and rewarding. Dr. DePaul worked for organizations in departments including training, performance improvement, management, knowledge management, quality, and quality assurance. His books include What the Heck is Leadership and Why Should I Care? 9 Practices of 21st Century Leadership, and The Most Effective and Responsible Clinical Training Techniques in Medicine. Jack?
Thanks, Jonathan. In this episode, we will further explore what is leadership exactly and why should you care. Our interview with Dr. DePaul includes conversation on leadership and trust, leadership evolution, action learning, unlabeled leadership, leadership myths, effective leadership, and secrets of leadership, and more. What are the obstacles of leadership? What differentiates a manager from a leader? What motivates us as an individual to stand up as leaders? Let's explore these points and questions with our next guest. Dr. DePaul, welcome to our podcast.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dr. DePaul, I'm so happy you're here. I'm really excited to get your insights on leadership. This is a topic I spend a lot of time and effort thinking and inquiring about.
Super excited about this conversation. All right, let's dive in here. First question, Dr. DePaul, how would you define leadership?
Yeah, the easiest question to ask with the most complicated answers, you know?
Exactly.
I think Maxwell said he has 21 different definitions. But yeah. I think I'll start by saying what I used to think leadership is. I used to think leadership is the art of getting things done through people. Sounds okay? Well, if you know Mary Parker Follett, that's her definition of management. What leadership is, it's first of all, it's a type of performance improvement discipline. And what I mean by that is it's a way of helping other people improve how they perform, which is just kind of a nice way of saying it. But also there's some principles, there's some practices, some well-defined ways of doing it. That's why, categorize it that way. So now I said that, I'll give you my formal definition. You ready?
Please do.
All right. Leadership is helping others mature their mental and moral qualities, capabilities, and behaviors.
That's
which
a
is
great
a
one.
Real, yeah. It's a fancy way of saying you're helping other people build character.
Yeah, that's a great one. I really like that. So then Dr. DePaul, then based on the way you define leadership, who cares about leadership? Aren't people just born to be a leader? They either have it or they don't?
Yeah, leaders are born and not made. But then again, everyone is born. None of us are made. We're not robots. But what I mean by that is anyone can practice leadership. If you look at someone like General Patton, okay, just throwing that out there, people may say, that guy is a great leader. But you don't see all the stuff that happened before you were able to say, that guy is a great leader. Like Michael Jordan, he's a great basketball player. He's like the legend, right?
Yeah.
Well,
right.
Think of all the hours and days he spent practicing over and over and over again to be able to make it seem seamless.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, I think another way that I think about leadership is really kind of a craft, right? I mean, and when I say craft, it's kind of that combination between art and science. You know, so I totally agree. It's a bit of an art, that's for sure. But I think that there's certain, on the science side, you know, there are certain principle-based and theory-based leadership principles that I think that once people, you know, really truly understand those and then being able to effectively apply those is where the art comes in and thereby making leadership sometimes a bit of a craft. You know, so I think it's kind of a balance between, you know, understanding how to deal with people from a more of a fundamental principle perspective, but also then having those skill sets to properly deploy and apply, you know, some of those ideas.
Yeah. What I would add to that is that the principles that are underlying what you do to lead, those are your guiding principles, so to speak. That it's your moral compass, your mental and moral compass.
Yeah, sure.
But the art is knowing how to apply those principles.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the examples I like to use there, and I mean, just by way of illustration, is the leader-member exchange theory, right? Which basically says that not everybody, you know, you can't treat everybody the same. You can't just apply a template for every single individual in the way that you lead. And sometimes being able to deliver a message, you can deliver that content, that message, but you do it in different ways that's most effective for a certain group of people or for certain individuals. And I think that sometimes as a leader, you have to kind of adjust, you know, how you approach that. You have to meet people where they are, right? And be able to deliver that message in the way that's most helpful for them.
Yeah, it's not black and white. There's ways of practicing leadership that on one day it may be done in a particular way, but the situation, the environment often dictates what you emphasize and how you lead.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dr. DePaul, I just want to share with our listeners a quote that you state, right? I guess a statement from your website. And so allow me just a moment to share a couple of quick quotes. And that is, quote, through my research, I discovered how the meaning of leadership has radically changed in the 21st century. Unfortunately, most of us still think traditionally, which can hurt the effectiveness of how we lead. You then further add, Dr. DePaul, quote, I analyze the best of what leadership books have to offer and write about the critical leadership patterns discovered among the books. And then you add that you use a process called meta-analysis, which is a technique that effectively examines leadership holistically. But then you go on to add that, to share one more quote, quote, I applied this technique to discover recent trends about the evolution of leadership, which is the focus of my book, Nine Practices of 21st Century Leadership. Dr. DePaul, can you share with our listeners from the general theme of your research? That is, how has leadership changed exactly, or how is it changing?
Yeah, I'll put it to you this way. If you think about my first answer and the Follett quotation about the art of getting things done through others, if you think of that as management, what I found from analyzing these different books, and some of them were more research-oriented in a quantitative way than others, some were qualitative. When I analyzed it, I found out that the purpose of leadership, how we do leadership, all that is different in this environment. If you do leadership right, if you enable other people to lead, to think for themselves, if you help them keep to the moral compass and keep that in mind as they act, you'll experience some really cool things. For example, performance improves, the culture grows, you find that business goals are more attainable. That's sure. Why you would do it. And that's kind of the themes that came out. But, you know, I guess I would add one other thing, that part of leadership, it's about creating a work environment in which people can be at their best. That's, if you think traditionally, that's not what traditional leadership is about.
Yeah, very interesting.
I'm sitting here and I found myself nodding in your definition of leadership. Particularly, I saw the two sides, the principal side, and then the way that particular leader, and then you mentioned the art form by which that particular leader brings it out. Does developing those who the leader works with, how does that fit in your definition of leadership? Is that central? Is that vertical component core?
Oh, definitely. The whole thing about leadership, it's bidirectional, first of all. In other words, because I'm helping other people, if I'm leading, I'm also getting better at leadership. I'm improving. I'm learning about myself. And it's centered around the relationships that you have with other people. And your mindset isn't about you. Leadership isn't about you. It's not about me. It's about the people we work with. And that whole mindset is kind of underlying all those principles and kind of drives how we interact. So I agree with what you just said.
I want to highlight this for our listeners, because oftentimes leadership is presented as task-based leadership. And what I'm hearing in your answer, Dr. DePaul, is the importance of the relationship in what you create through leadership. And that relationship is an effort for business performance improvement. And it really opens the frame about what it means to be a leader.
Yeah. Can I give you a real quick example?
Please.
That kind of,
absolutely.
Yeah. So this kind of puts it in light. We're all aware of the COVID-19 pandemic, right? And how virtual everything has become.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. I was talking to a VP, and he said to me that when he meets with his people and has working sessions, his intention is to just get the work done, just do it. But he caught himself. And at the beginning of a call, if it was one-on-one, for example, he would ask the person, how are you doing? How are things getting along? How are you? In fact, in this particular case, he said, how are your children doing with all the work at home, schooling at home kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And that employee said, when my boss, the VP, said that at the beginning of each conversation I had, I really felt valued. And by answering him, I was able to let go some of the angst that is associated with that. But then I was able to focus on what we were trying to accomplish. And so that relationship, how you connect with people, has a profound effect on how they perform and how they achieve goals.
Yeah. Great example.
Incredible. And now that we've got some context around what we really mean with leadership, I want to shift the conversation a little bit, Gary, to action learning and how organizations limit their own success. So you wrote in a piece titled Biggest Mistakes in Action Learning that from one particular interview, you discovered a flaw in an organization's action learning project. Can you share that insight and what you discovered? And can you put it in the context of how do organizations limit their own access to leadership growth through action learning?
Yeah, sure. Let me share the story that I had on my mind and when I was writing that, and I think that that will start to answer what you're trying to get at.
Sure.
I was doing some focus groups for a large financial company, a national, you know, would be like a Fortune 50 company. I was interviewing mid-level managers. And this one guy was talking to me. He said, you know, one thing really good about this company is they'll go up to you and they'll say, we value you. We want you in a what they called a leadership position, which means an executive VP position. We want you to develop and we want to help develop you. And in this particular case, the manager said, or the VP, you know, who reported to, said, I'm going to put you in a program that we're doing, and it's a special program where we're going to have you work with peers on an enterprise problem that none of us have solved. It's going to be a cross-functional team, but it's all about action learning because you're going to have a coach that's going to help the team and help you individually. Okay, long story short, goes through this experience, and then the manager, he says to me, after that was it. I completed the experience. We did presentation for the C-suite. It was well received. We made some major changes, but that was it. They didn't tap me in to do anything else. And I was thinking, what the heck? They said they want me to be an EVP. They want me to develop, to continue to grow, but they put me through this experience. It felt like afterwards checking a box. Okay, we did this for him.
Yeah.
And that's where it fell short. Is it was a short-term plan. It was like an assignment that was, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months long. I'm guessing. I don't know how long it actually was. But it was substantial. And then there was no follow-up. There was no long-term plan for developing this person. And it just became, go back to your regular work. And, you know, we'll figure it out later.
So significant waste of time, money, and effort, and at the end results were no delivery, right? I mean, it's when you make changes, you also have to have a plan to sustain those changes as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. And with this person, he's stuck in his position.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would not be surprised, and I don't think he's going to do this. I would not be surprised if he starts looking for other companies that are willing to take him to the next level and are willing to continue to develop him with his leadership.
Yeah. So go beyond the checkbox.
Yeah.
Gary, well, this is a great story. So there's a couple of things coming out. One is I realize some of our listeners may not know what action learning is. So just a brief definition, learning through project, through work, generally supported by a coach. And Gary, if I've mischaracterized that, please, correct me.
That's it.
And
you're
so
there.
One of the other things I'm seeing in this story is it almost sounds like the organization viewed its leadership development as a project-based outcome rather than a developmental outcome. And it sounded like that view created a situation where this high-performing leader might be dissatisfied despite doing well on a project.
Yeah, you're tapping into something that is a flaw with, well, this company's particular system. And here's why I mean. they have a leadership development group, and all they do is they build leadership programs. Now, this is a few years ago. It was before virtual learning, and they really wanted in-person stuff. So they had these big 2-3-day programs. It was up to the manager or the person going through the leadership program to take care of the development part. In other words, build the plan. Now, with performance reviews, if you're in a company like this one was, where you do an annual performance review, you give someone a number or whatever, rate how well they do, there's usually a part where there's a development plan. You know, sure. What are we going to do to... Yeah, exactly. Well, the HR department, they tracked people's progress and whether they completed the review, but they did nothing for tracking the development plan. In fact, if you didn't even do a development plan, or if you just put some words in, then no one knows. No one knew. So you're leaving a lot to chance and a lot to managers. Yeah.
Absolutely. Great point. So Dr. DePaul, to kick off this conversation, we talked about, you know, in your definition of leadership, how it was an art and maybe a bit of a craft. And, you know, there's this, the finding this balance between applying, you know, theory perhaps is useful. And then not only that, but the fact that you had several nice podcasts and some nice posts, and I want to share those with our listeners. So I want to reference another blog of yours that I found interesting. And that was a leadership development formula that works, learn, do, assess. And in that, you mentioned that it wasn't until I started studying leadership before I improved my leadership practices substantially. Can you explain what you mean by that and why that is?
Yeah, if you're like a lot of people, not meaning you in particular, but a lot of managers learn just by doing. In other words, they kind of make it up as they go. They sort of develop a leadership practice, but it may not be something that is well-defined and well thought of. In fact, you know, you mentioned me about how I didn't, until I started studying it, it didn't really improve that much. Well, what triggered one of those things was a job interview where someone asked me, well, what's your leadership philosophy? I don't know. It's, you know, you make up something on the spot, right? But it, you know, I don't know. It was maybe like 6 or 7, maybe 10 years ago. I started studying in earnest what leadership is. And it wasn't until I started that I was able to practice some of the practice leadership, essentially, you know, formally thinking about what leadership is, what's involved in doing it, and then applying it, and then getting feedback, where I deliberately managed to get feedback from other people and was able to adjust what I was doing. Until I started that formula, learn, do, assess, you know, I just kind of winged it.
Sure. I mean, but what does it matter, though? I mean, if you'd mentioned it's not well defined or it's not well thought through or not well thought of in terms of leadership and in your leadership style, who cares? I mean, if it works, right? If you're in the context of a specific organization, why does it matter? I mean, what I'm doing is working. Why do I have to define it? Why do I have to go through that work? Why do I have to, you know, really understand what leadership is?
Sure. You can just get by just kind of doing what I said, winging it. But if you really want to change people's lives, if you really want to have the extraordinary happen, you have to practice leadership. You have to formally learn and try to figure this stuff out and wrestle with it to be able to make what may have been impossible to some possible. And once you start experiencing with a team the results of you practicing on a daily basis, just small acts that accumulate over time, until you experience that, then you probably won't have those extraordinary moments and you're relying too much to chance.
Yeah, right. I think that's the key. You're relying too much to chance, and then you're also assuming that what works in one context may work in another context. So I think if I were to distill your answer, I think you're saying that there's great value in understanding even concepts and theories of leadership and approaches to leadership and really closely examining what works and what doesn't and why not. So going through that active process of really understanding what leadership means or does not mean makes your ability to apply that to your work context that much more effective.
Yeah, sure. It's like process mapping. Mm-hmm. You know, I could draw out a process and do a pretty good job. But if I really learned about what goes into mapping a process, I could do a much better job and actually identify things through that process, through doing that activity, that I wouldn't have realized if I had not had that training and that learning about process mapping.
Absolutely.
Gary, I'm going to shift the conversation here. This is not meant to be a trick question, and you'll understand why I say that in a second. In your view, what is the difference between leadership and management?
Yeah, the big thing about it, and I write extensively in my last book and I get out kind of my pet peeves about management. The big thing is management is a role. It's a formal role. When you go to a company's website and you look at their jobs, you're going to see a list of managerial roles.
Sure.
You're not going to see a list of leadership roles. You might see something that says project lead or project leader, or in the military, there's a fair amount of leader. But when you look at the tasks are geared around managerial activities, and they might throw in, and by the way, do leadership as well.
Hmm. Yeah.
So leadership is something you apply to a role to make it better. And you don't have to be a manager. You don't have to be an executive. But it boils down to four types of managers. You have people managers. You have managers of process. You have managers of projects. And you have managers of structures.
Sure.
You know, a role is something that's formal within a company that has assigned tasks. Leadership is a way of practicing those tasks.
Gary, I want to follow up here because I want to divide. There's the role and the way of practicing, but what is the mindset of management versus the mindset of leadership?
Yeah, here's the mindset. As a manager, you're doing things like performance reviews. You're hiring people. You're firing people. You're making sure the people that are working for you have the tools that they need to get the job done. They're removing barriers, and it's very fine, well-defined tasks that you do. But leadership is different. Leadership is how you do the tasks. I could give you an example, but I think it'd be a little bit too long to really explain how leadership could affect something.
So I want to just take a moment and pause here. What I'm hearing from you is that management is really role-oriented or task-oriented, both in the behavior and in the mindset towards what their responsibility is. And if I'm understanding your earlier answer, leadership is about developing people and those organizations through what they're doing so that the task becomes a means to do that, rather than
yes,
the sole focus in itself. Is that really capture?
That's perfect. If I was going to fire someone, I can follow the rules, do it verbatim. But if I was going to do it from a leadership perspective, that person leaving the company most likely would have a much better experience when that person departs than if I was just verbatim, you know, following the particular process. I would make sure that person understood why that person is leaving, why we're parting ways, and I would make sure that that person was set up for success going forward with whatever role they would move on to.
So, Dr. DePaul, I want to switch gears to another podcast that you did, because I want to share this with our listeners. But you had a podcast. It was called The Three Leadership Myths, Rarely Discussed, If at All. Do you mind sharing with our listeners, even if a bit briefly, what those three myths are?
Yeah. The first myth is leadership is about getting things done through others. And that's, we already talked about that. That's management. Yep. It's not leadership at all.
Mm-hmm.
Second one, organizations have leadership roles. And we just talked about that. Now they have manager roles. They have individual contributor roles. But through any of them, you can practice leadership. And the third one is to practice effective leadership, you apply the best style to meet the needs of a specific situation. Now, if you think of styles, leadership styles, you have to go back to academics. I mean, you can help me out, bureaucratic. There's a bureaucratic style. There's a transactional style. There's a transformational style, you know.
Servant leadership. But, yeah.
Yeah. I think all those style is just a set of behaviors.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't get hung up on styles and saying, okay, in this style, right now, situational leadership, by the way, is completely different. An example from that is coaching. In this situation, I want to coach and help that person, or I want to be directive. Yeah, okay, sure. But leadership, if you get hung up on styles, I think you're just going to get yourself in trouble, and it's going to make it difficult when situations happen for you to sit there and say, okay, what style am I supposed to be doing, rather than acting on principles that guide your way to interact with people.
Dr. DePaul, going off of these three leadership myths, you also mentioned five behaviors one can use and may need to have when communicating with executives. And this is a challenge a lot of people in organizations face. Can you briefly share those for our listeners?
Yeah. I'll highlight some of them. Speaking the language of executives is a big part of it. Persuading with data and not just saying this is a great idea. But when you write a report, when you're communicating, the tendency is to use an academic structure. And what I mean by that is that you start in general terms and you build up to a conclusion. Well, when you're communicating with people in business, you want to reverse that. Go straight to the punch. Here's what's going on. Here's why we need to do it. And here's some additional information if you need the details. So, for example, one of the five is when you write an email, you begin with the message and then you follow by the action that's needed. If you read executive emails, and executives are bad about this, they'll put the message and they'll put the action that's being asked way down in the bottom. If you're an executive, if you're a manager, you open up one of these emails, the first thing you'll say is, what's the message? Do I have to do anything? Oh, it's informational only. I can put it aside. I don't have to take any action. Great. I'll do that later. You know, so make it easier for the people that you're communicating with, and especially executives. So front load it rather than try to do this build up.
And this is a very useful practical tip for our listeners here.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dr. DePaul, another quote that I just really enjoyed, and honestly, I don't remember exactly. I think this was in a post, but I think it's so true, and it's a great point. And you had mentioned, quote, one person believing in you, telling you how to make a difference, and instilling confidence can be enough to create a spark. Can you elaborate on that for our listeners and why that's such a valuable leadership tool?
Yeah, this was a theme that came up over and over and over again in these books I analyzed. And it came up actually on a podcast or two. I'm going to share someone else's story that really gets at it. And this was Felix Nader. You can look up the podcast. He was in the military. He was doing some inspections, and he was near a firing range. And he heard this sergeant, I think it was a sergeant, yelling at a soldier. And Felix walked over and said, "Sergeant, what are you doing?" And the sergeant said, I'm mad at this person because she cannot line up her sights and hit the target." And Felix said, "Well, why are you yelling at her?" And he said, that's how, and Felix said, stop, let me talk to her. So he went down in the trench, I believe it was, and asked her what she was doing, what the problem was, and the soldier conveyed, I'm really good at marksmanship. I know how to do this, but this sergeant is yelling at me. I can't concentrate. And Felix said, I want you to hit the target. I want you to do it in 4 shots or 6 shots. I can't remember exactly. Anyway, he was able to put her mind at ease and help her achieve the goal of the target practice. So the moral of it, if you have to think of it that way, how you treat someone can substantially affect how they perform.
Absolutely. Everybody's different. Every individual is unique. Absolutely. They respond differently. That's a great story. Great illustration.
This is so powerful in that leader recognized what that person needed and then used himself to give that person the confidence to achieve the goal and without making that person wrong in the process. I mean, that is a phenomenal example.
Yeah. When you see people, you have to believe in them, which is one of the leadership principles. You need to believe that they're capable of doing the work. And if you treat them that way, chances are it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at someone, and Liz Wiseman in her book, Multipliers, she talks about a tank commander. If you look at someone and you're expecting this tank commander to do terrible, that tank commander is going to do terrible. So how we interact with people, just believing in them, giving them a chance, giving them an opportunity, changes how you interact with them, and it changes how they feel about their situation and gives them the confidence that they need.
Yeah, and Dr. DePaul, I'm actually going to say this now. I think this is probably the third podcast, but I think what you're saying is the same thing we've heard from Dr. Clark and others that's been on the show, and this is illustrated through a great deal of some different research. And two of the most important attributes that a leader can have is empathy and allowing for two-way communication. And I think that's really what you're saying there is being able to listen, understand where people are at, and being able to not just talk, but listen and respond in a way that's most productive for the individual. So that's a great illustration.
Yeah, and I like how you phrased that.
Dr. DePaul, this is opening up another area of inquiry for me. In one of your posts, you mentioned, what does it really take to be an effective leader? And you share that to be effective, you need a moral compass, and that there are 7 secrets that are components of your leadership compass. And you recommend that leaders think of them as principles that can guide how they behave when interacting with others. And listening to the prior story about how that leader could support that that soldier, what are those 7 secrets and principles of leadership, and what do they look like in action?
Yeah, I call these overt secrets. And what I mean by they are overt secrets.
Yeah, they're out there, but everyone knows them.
Yeah, it's sort of like the phrase, yeah, that's common sense, but it may not be common practice.
Yeah.
You know, these are all labeled terms. They're loaded terms. And you think you understand them when you hear them, but it isn't until you dig into them and you find some examples that the principles come to life. And that's why I mean by studying leadership, when you really get at what these principles are and you find example after example after example, it affects how you interact with other people. So I'll rattle them off. They're, sure. I mean, each one of them is like a book in itself. You heard the first one, believe in others, connect with others, mm-hmm. put others first, give up control, encourage change. And I think that one really, I regret calling it that. I wish I called it encourage growth, because change kind of gets you thinking about change management, And I guess the last two, collaborate with others and develop leadership practice continuously. So those are the seven principles that were derived from, I think, 16 contemporary books on leadership.
Interesting. So one other, and thank you so much for your time. This has been a fun conversation. I know that I have one more question for you, Dr. DePaul, and I know Jonathan does as well. So I think to wrap up our conversation and our time together today, I have another question for you here. And that is, you say in your website, which I personally think is a sign of a strong and authentic leadership, and that is, quote, "I made plenty of mistakes and missed opportunities. Still, I've matured from these experiences. At least I hope I have. Even though I've accomplished much, I'm still learning. I continue to search for ways to push myself outside of my comfort zone." And in fact, Dr. DePaul, you wrote a blog entitled, I believe it was "Being Vulnerable and Getting to Know Others Builds Trust Before Psychological Safety." What can you add about leadership, authenticity, and trust? I mean, that seems pretty important to any relationship. Why did you share that idea through a blog, and why is that so important?
Yeah, I'll hit the thing about authenticity, which is pretty simple. So it's one of those concepts that you know when someone's doing it and when they're not. And authenticity, what I think of it is, and by the way, forget authentic leadership. I mean, just don't even get caught up in that label. You know, authentic leadership is just another way of saying you're congruent with your thoughts and feelings and your words and behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when I say something to a team, they know that I'm speaking from my heart. I'm speaking what I'm thinking. I don't have an ulterior motive or ulterior agenda. And that's what congruency means. And people who are congruent, they build trust. And this goes back to connecting with others, that principle. If I could connect with the people on my team, I can achieve so much more and they'll be open with me. And a real quick example, a guy named Randy Moon took over as the senior VP of a department of, I don't know, we were like 90 people or something like that. And he had an all-hands meeting. It was all on the same day. And this is where you would expect Randy to say, well, here's the direction of our team, what we're doing, how we're going to change the company. But no, he talked about how he was kidnapped in Argentina.
Right.
And, you know, it just kind of like that story. But what happened, this is the part that blew my mind. You know, afterwards you congregate, you know, with different groups and walk up to them. Well, they were all going, man, Randy is fantastic. I can't wait till he moves his office so I could just walk in and talk to him. And they went on like that. And I was like, what happened? You know, I didn't get it. I really did. It was like, okay, but I knew Randy. I had interacted with him. So it was a little different. It was in that moment I realized that sharing our vulnerability, sharing when we cannot do something, acknowledging when we screw up, taking ownership of that has a huge effect on other people. It gives them permission to do the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. DePaul, I'm sitting here and I am so at ease listening to you on this. I think it's fantastic. That definition of congruence is really, for me, about leadership modeling. And I have yet to find a more impactful way for leaders both to build that trust in themselves, their organizations, and their cultures, or destroy it by misusing modeling. Now, that's a phenomenal example. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I'm also sad that this is our last question. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and it's one of my favorite questions to ask. If you were going to distill down your years of experience, your research, your expertise, and your perspective, what would your closing remarks be for both our listeners, our practitioners, and our audience in general in terms of effective leadership? What would you ask them to do? What would you ask them to look for? And how would you ask them to be? Dr. DePaul?
Yeah, three things. And you've already heard it earlier on the episode. Learn, do, assess. Study leadership. Learn as much as you can about it. Read the books. Take notes. But that only gets you so far. If you're reading a book on how to play tennis, you're not going to become a tennis pro, you know?
There you go.
So you got to read, and you have to try applying. what I would want people to do is let the people they work with know that you're trying to get better at leadership. In fact, here are three things I'm trying to do better. And team or colleagues or customers, call me out on it if I'm not doing this. And then assess and just ask people. You don't even have to do a 360, but ask people, how am I doing? You know, with a direct report, one of the things I've been trying to do with you is whatever. How am I doing with that?
So, Dr. DePaul, what I'm hearing is one of the behaviors we can have leaders do is actually be overt with what they're trying to learn and study in their leadership, and to use their teams as a tool of feedback. Say, how am I doing? Independent of it's a 360. Is that right? And what does that enable?
Yeah, exactly. What it does is it gives people you work with permission to give you feedback. And what's critical, if you ever read Vital Smart's book, Influencer, they talk about this, and it is so important. The minute someone gives you feedback is a crucial moment. And how you act is critical, because if you respond in a positive way, if you thank the person, if you acknowledge what they say, chances are that person will give you feedback over and over again. Or if you become hostile, if you get upset, then, well, guess what happens? No feedback, you know?
Yeah. And then the loop stops.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So a safe way of doing this is something Marshall Goldsmith talks about, and he calls it feed forward. What you do is you ask someone to give you some help. Hey, I'm trying to get better at listening. I'm trying to get better at empathy. Can you give me two ideas of what I can do to become better at that? And the rule is you can't talk about my past. And the other rule is my only role is to listen. My only task is to listen, and I cannot interrupt. And at the very end, the only thing I can say is, thank you.
That's very powerful. Very, very powerful. I have to admit, I've worked with some great leaders and some great people, but I don't think I've ever been asked those questions. Very powerful, indeed.
I have an executive coach that I meet with every other week. A coach doesn't give you advice, but on occasions, he'll get out of character and he'll say, I'm going to step out of my role and I want to share something with you. And he shared with me that if I was to write about blogs about how great I am or the good things I've done or all the accomplishments I made, people aren't going to be that interested. But if I write about how I screwed up, I made mistakes, if I write about shortcomings, people are going to say, I want to read more about this. They can relate to you because they do it too. If you're an executive, check this out. If you're a chief executive officer or anyone at the executive VP level, and you go up to the people you report to and say, I just had my performance review and I really stink at whatever, what do you advise me to do to get better? Seriously, how many executives have come up to you, your boss, and said, I stink at this. How can I get better?
You know? Yeah, right.
Transformational in both individual culture and organization at scale, and you do that right.
Yeah.
And I think, as you'd mentioned, Dr. DePaul, is, you know, sharing and talking about your failures and your challenges, and really versus talking about how great you are and what you've done successfully, both may be true. But when you share your experiences and your challenges, what you're really doing is sharing with people an opportunity to develop and learn from themselves, right? It's collaborative learning. So they're learning from the experience of others. And when someone sits here and tells you how great they are, you probably don't learn much from that. But when you learn from them in that process of being great, which they probably were, what were their biggest challenges? Where did they fall on their face? And that's really a learning tool. And as you'd mentioned before, leadership is about personal development of those that you're leading. And that's a much greater asset. That's a much greater tool.
Yeah, that's eloquently stated. And it's Albert Bandura calls it vicarious learning. And as we talked about earlier, we're models, all of us. We model behaviors with everyone around us. So let's model the humanity. Let's model how we make mistakes and how we deal with mistakes.
And what that modeling can create. Dr. Yeah. DePaul, thank you for an amazing conversation. I can't believe it's an hour. I could have easily done another.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time today. Rich conversation. The time flew, unfortunately. But keep up the good work, and we look forward to learning more from the Unlabeled Leadership podcast, which I enjoy thoroughly. I recommend to all of our listeners to check that out. Thank you again, Dr. DePaul, and be well.
Thank you very much.
Wow, Jack, that was an amazing conversation.
It sure was, Jonathan. So much fun. Please join us in our next episode as we discuss the value of objective ERP system selection with Mr. Mehdi Eftahi. Mehdi is co-founder of Technology Evaluation Centers and Chief Technology Officer. His development work led to TechAdvisor, Tech's world-class decision-making system. Mehdi also holds a patent in the algorithm behind eBestMatch, the engine that powers TechAdvisor, and Mehdi is an industry leader in the field of decision-making processes and has assessed the requirements of IT decision-makers, software vendors, consultants, and governments. An expert in the area of matching customer criteria to software capabilities, Mehdi steered the creation of Tech's best practice software selection methodology. Please join us next week.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review, because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to. And we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.